And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light, 3-0, and she's gone!
Welcome to the 3-0 Show, part of the Athletic Baseball Show. It is Thursday, July 7th. Derek Van Riper, Petroli, Eno Saris here. Today, we take a look at the six current division leaders. We're going to try and upgrade each of those front runners. We'll talk about a few of the issues those teams have and a few threats that might be lingering within those division races, of course. The division races around the league don't look great, but a few are closer than others. So we'll poke some holes in a few different contenders. We'll take a look at the first ever 3-0 World Series Challenge. Sounds amazing. So I will be sure to get everyone up to speed on what that is and how it works before
World
we dive in.
Series Challenge.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for. And we've got a new segment called Pest Control. I'm not even going to tell you what it's about. It's just called Pest Control. So look forward to that as well. Let's get at it. Let's talk about these six teams that are currently leading divisions. Let's talk about the Yankees first, because no one ever talks about the Yankees.
I thought we had like a personal ban on thinking of the Yankees because too many people talk about the Yankees.
We have seven teams that are currently banned from being discussed on this podcast, and at least two of them are on the rundown
to talk
for
about
today.
The Brewers.
No, they're one of the banned teams. I'm not allowed to talk about them. So we're 4 weeks out from the trade deadline. It's Tuesday, August 2nd, weirdest trade deadline date that I can remember. And the Yankees are a very well-built team. They are, in my mind right now, they're Russell Hammond in the movie Almost Famous standing on top of the roof and says, "I am a golden god," and then he jumps in the pool. Sorry to spoil it. It's an old movie. But the Yankees are good across the board. They are second in WRC+. They're first in home runs. They are first in starting pitcher war. They're second in relief pitcher war. And they're number one in the league in defensive runs saved this season. So they are very well constructed across the board. Our biggest critique of the Yankees going all the way back to the lockout times, back during the winter, was that with the core they have in place, they were at high risk to underperform projections because of injury concerns. And so far to this point in the season, through the first half, they've been pretty healthy. This is a team that hasn't had its share of injuries quite the same way as some of the other top teams around the league have had. So I begin with a simple question. I'll throw this one to Eno first. Are the Yankees really the best team in baseball going forward? Because they've been the best team in baseball by record, and of all the contending teams, being first or second and all the things we generally care about says they've done it statistically to this point.
Yeah, amazingly, the projected rest of season numbers have the Astros ahead. Partially because the projection system doesn't believe the Yankees can continue scoring at the rate that they're scoring. So they are, according to the projection systems, going to regress on offense. I don't know if I believe that. It is interesting to me that they continue to hit homers as if it was 2019 and everybody else is hitting homers as if it was 2022. So maybe there's some regression coming there, but instead I think they've done a really good job of like matching the personnel that they've got to their park. So they're just a behemoth at home, and then they're just generally good players, so they're fine on the road too. But, you know, if you look at this offense, you want to say it's going to regress. Yeah, there's certainly some players that are playing at above a level than they have normally in the past. There are also players that are playing below the level they've established in the past. Like Joey Gallo, like, needs the little metal paddles, you know, like the little resuscitation. I think it might still be in him. The projections like the fact that he's still barreling balls like he always has, and that the projections say he's going to hit 20 more homers. So if Joey Gallo hits you 20 more homers, that's going to cover up somebody else either being injured or regressing a little bit offensively. Judge has slowed down a little bit. He's, you know, in the last few weeks, it's not been sort of in that other stratosphere. But I don't really see a problem. I think the only thing, there's only two things that you would want to do if you're the Yankees and you're thinking about the rest of the season, and the postseason, really, is do you think you can get a number two starter that is better than your number two or a number three? Can you get a playoff starter that's better than one of your current playoff starters? I think I would line them up in the playoffs, something like maybe Cole, Montgomery, Severino, leaving Taillon and Cortez as either the piggybacks for the fourth. That's really good. But what if you thought you could slot, who do you think might be available that's like the very top pitcher that could be available?
Well, at one point, it was Frankie Montas.
Right.
And his MRI on Tuesday, I don't know if we get the results from that yet. I didn't see it as of Wednesday morning. So if he's fine, he's still that guy. Obviously, he'll go through a physical if there's a trade and he has to pass that. But I was wondering if Noah Syndergaard has moved the needle at all in the last five starts or so. We talked about him earlier this season as someone who wasn't striking a lot of guys out. His June and first start in July have looked a bit better. 28-7 strikeout to walk in 30 innings, 360 ERA, 110 whip, similar ratios for the season as a whole. I mean, he might kind of surface up as someone that ends up being available and ends up being one of the higher ceiling pitchers available if his ceiling is still where it was pre-injury. What do you think, Britt? Who else is out there that you think could be an impact starter?
Yeah, and he kind of reminds me of like Patrick Corbin, who has had three good starts in a row, who I guess like a month ago, nobody would want to touch, right? Yeah, like do you do that as like a potential, you know, buy? You're not giving up really anything for these guys, right? Like,
yeah. It's
not a great market to be upgrading starting pitching wise, which is why I think Brian Cashman came out and said a couple days ago, they're looking to upgrade the outfield. Like you mentioned, Joey Gallo, Aaron Hicks hasn't performed well. It's easier to upgrade the outfield. You look at Andrew Benintendi, could be a guy. Trey Mancini could be a guy. If you really want to get crazy, what about Brian Reynolds in Pittsburgh or Cedric Mullins, Austin Hayes? Those are all guys who have control, so they wouldn't just be rentals. So the Yankees would actually be setting themselves up beyond this year. But I don't think the way the market sits right now, they go out and get that number two starter. You know, I don't think that guy exists, really, unfortunately.
I don't see them doing the Reynolds, Mullins, you know, put a lot. Because look at their offseason. They went and got a shortstop that's not going to be around for a long time, that's defensive-minded, because I think they think a lot of Anthony Volpe, their top one of their top prospects that's coming up, and he's a young shortstop. So I think that they would rather grow a center fielder and a shortstop in their own organization, because those are traditionally places that defense matters a lot, and defense peaks early when you're young. So you really would rather grow your own shortstop and center fielder and sign all the rest. So I see them trying to win now and win later. So if they're not, and maybe Pablo Lopez, you know, from the Marlins is possibly available.
Yeah.
But if they don't get a playoff starter, then all I see them doing is maybe papering over an issue that pops up injury wise between now and the deadline, or finding a role player that augments their outfield in some way. So maybe like a Michael Taylor, you know, to take at bats against.
Benintendi is also going to be a free agent.
Yeah. So yeah, somebody that, a rental situation, doesn't cost as much and slots in maybe in a platoon in the outfield. So that's, I think Benintendi is probably the high end of what the Yankees will do.
So the bullpen's nasty, right? I mean, the Clay Holmes acquisition at the last deadline has been gold for them. Chapman's healthy again. Michael King's been great, and they've got depth behind those guys too. I think the other question is, if the Yankees go through the deadline and they don't make a big move, if it's just, let's add one more reliever to offset the loss of Chad Green, that would make sense. It doesn't necessarily have to be a flashy name. It could be another Holmes-type guy, someone that they see that they think they can fix. They've got the track record. You could almost write the narrative right now. You can hear it playing out in your head. Injuries pile up in the second half. And then Yankees fans turn on Brian Cashman again and say, why didn't Cash do more to upgrade this roster at the trade deadline? We knew it was an old roster that could get hurt and, you know, the lead shrinks, but they still, they're a playoff team for sure. They're probably going to coast to a pretty easy division win, even if they have some issues in the second half of the season. But I did find it difficult to see clear upgrades on this roster right now because they've been so fortunate on the injury front. And behind the plate, I guess, is one spot you could look at. Jose Trevino has been great so far, and they don't need offense for every spot. You can have Kiner Falefa and Trevino as great defenders, and anything you get from them as hitters is just kind of a bonus because you've got a lineup that runs six or seven deep that stacks up as well as any offense in the league. So, I mean, how angry are Yankees fans going to be if this is not a big deadline, Britt?
I don't think they're going to be angry if the Yankees continue to play well, like you said. If they're floundering in September, yeah, they're going to be upset. But I think the biggest thing they can do is supplement the Joey Gallo. If Joey Gallo is not going to bounce back, then you go and you get an outfielder. And that's really all you can do. I mean, this isn't a great trade deadline by any means. I feel like we've had years past where there's been just like a lot of really bad teams. And you're like, oh, some stars are on the move. I don't see a whole lot of stars here. I mean, who's the biggest star that gets moved? Montas? Josh Bell? I mean, there's just really only like five guys who I feel comfortable saying these guys will get traded. The rest of it, I think right now, as we sit here in early July, our team's kind of sifting through what they want to do.
Here's the name that may be a superstar and might be for the Yankees is Wilson Contreras.
That would be the splashy move. That would be a nice
he's,
move.
Yeah. As a free agent, yeah. So it's a rental, might not cost him that much, and is an offensive upgrade behind the plate. If they add Wilson Contreras, they have one hole in that offense.
Yeah.
And Isaiah Kiner-Falefa can make some contact, and he's not like an absolute zero.
I think that's a Houston guy. I think Houston could upgrade there. I think that's a Houston move.
That's the weird thing about Houston, right? I mean, they're the only offense that's been better
similar,
so far,
right? They're
than
both
the
really good. You know, they both probably won't spend for a huge acquisition and probably want to like buy a rental that helps them at a certain position.
First base and catcher, really, right? Those are the two holes. They're a good team. They're a really good team.
To me, they're the two most complete teams today, as we record this show. There are teams that are very close that are dealing with a few more injuries than the Yankees and Astros have so far. But I'm with Britt here. Yuli Gurriel is the spot you could upgrade. It's kind of like the problem in the outfield for the Yankees. If they upgrade it, great. If they don't, they're probably still okay. And just like the Yankees, the catchers in Houston don't hit. So they could also be a fit for Wilson Contreras or Sean Murphy. We talked about Sean Murphy, you know, back when the A's were moving players in March, and we thought maybe Sean Murphy to the Yankees would make sense. Maybe Sean Murphy to the Astros actually makes some sense. But they're pitching. The Astros pitching is so good, and they should get Lance McCullers Jr. back at some point too. So they've got, you know, six healthy starters at the moment. One of them is just Jake Odorizzi, who kind of helps you eat innings in the second half and then sort of disappears in the postseason. But McCullers could be another weapon they get back. Christian Javier has been amazing so far. I mean, this is just another kind of banner year for Houston in terms of things falling into place and having depth kind of all over the place. I'm really just amazed they've been able to sustain it this long. I thought we'd start to see some decline this year, and that has not been the case so far.
No, it hasn't. Well, two things. I think nobody realized how good Jeremy Peña was going to be and how he was going to easily slot in and really make the loss of Carlos Correa. Like, they really haven't felt that at all because he's been so good. And then also, they're pitching, as you mentioned. Lance McCullers talked Tuesday. He's coming back fairly soon. It's just a matter of building back up now that arm strength. So that is a second half trade deadline acquisition, right? Teams love saying that, like, oh, we're getting back this guy. There's our trade deadline move. But I mean, in Houston's case, it's a pretty good trade deadline pickup, honestly. And they have a wealth of outfielders that they could trade from if they want to go and get an upgrade at first base or catcher. They have a lot of guys, even down at AAA. They're kind of stocked down there, so they're just set up really well. It wouldn't surprise me. I know Ina said he doesn't necessarily believe those projections. It wouldn't surprise me if the Astros pass the Yankees at all, just because I think it's a little more sustainable to rely on pitching than it is to rely on offense. Offense is always going to go through those waves, and Houston just stands to get better here as we sit here on July 6th.
Yeah, the projections do say the Astros will score more runs going forward. Getting Jeremy Peña back was great. And then also just the emergence of Jeremy Peña has been super important for that team because now their holes are basically, you know, center field-ish, first base and catcher. You know, those are things that most teams have a hole offensively in catcher. So, and then Gurriel, he's projected to get a little better going forward. But it's also an easy place to fix. First base is usually something that you can go find something. I kind of think they may need a late reliever. We saw in that series, you know, sometimes it gets a little hairy back there. Ryan Pressly's knee has been an issue. His command is off. He's down a little bit velo-wise. And I just think it would be nice for them to have one more arm. It doesn't look like it has to be a lefty or a righty, but David Robertson off of the Cubs is on a rental contract. The stuff numbers for him are good. I think David Robertson could be their type of acquisition.
Yeah, one more in the pen. I mean, you could say that about pretty much every team we're going to talk about today, and it wouldn't hurt in most cases, but I think you're right. Going one deeper would definitely be a nice upgrade for Houston.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's talk about the Twins, because they're a bit different than the Yankees and the Astros. Not quite the same sort of overwhelmingly great team across the board, but very good in some areas. And I think built well enough and deep enough where they should push chips in. They should actually try and make this roster better. I think the thing that really stands out to me is that their offense is a top five offense, a 112 WRC plus. They've been just as good as the Blue Jays offense so far. If you'd said that back in mid-March, think people would have laughed. They would have said, no way. There's no chance that halfway through the season, the Twins are going to score runs like the Blue Jays do. They're going to hit home runs like the Blue Jays do. They're going to keep the strikeout rate under control the same way the Blue Jays do. The warts that we saw at the beginning of the season have been there, but they haven't been as bad as expected. The starting pitching, I think, is exceeding expectations a little bit. They're tied for 12th in Fangraph's war as a team with that group. The bullpen has been a bit leaky, and defensively, they're not quite as good as I expected. So, you know, you look at this team and you see Sonny Gray and Joe Ryan as their current 1-2. You'd love to upgrade that. I think the Twins are one of those teams, along with the Cardinals, where every time the Frankie Montas conversation begins, the Twins are one of the first teams people spit out and say they could use him. I've also thought that they make sense as a possible trade partner for the Rockies with Germán Márquez, right? We're talking about this as a bad trade deadline where you have to be a little more creative to find upgrades. Márquez isn't just a rental. The Twins' starting pitching problems go beyond this season. I think that could be one possible path. And then obviously the Marlins. We've talked about their pitching depth on this show a lot. They're another team that you could take someone, maybe Austin Martin, who's not going to help you this year. Flip Austin Martin to Miami, get a big league rotation piece back as part of the return. Maybe that's one of the ways
someone
they can
that
do
has
it.
Some team control, because most of their guys have some team control.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that'd be the way they can make the biggest impact. But compared to the bullpens of the Yankees, the Astros, and the teams leading the divisions in the NL, how problematic is the Twins bullpen as it's currently constructed? I see some underperformance, but underperformance doesn't explain why they're 23rd in WAR as a unit, right? They're probably more of a league average bullpen that's underperformed, as opposed to a playoff caliber bullpen that just mows everybody down. And, you know, what do you think about the Twins pen?
I really like Duran. I really like Griffin Jacks. Duffy is fine. If Pagan is not your closer, I think he's okay. I found a surprising little weakness here. Minnesota is 20th versus lefties as a pitching staff in strikeouts minus walks. So they're a bottom third team against lefties. And if you look at that pen, you're like, oh, I do kind of get it. Their big lefty is Giovanni Moran, who has been paying, who's playing okay, and he's fine. Their other one is McGill. Maybe you could just say that's enough, but I think a big lefty might solve two issues where you get a late inning guy that's going to throw hard, has a lot of stuff, makes your entire late game your late game plan better, and also might be a lefty. So you know, if I know it's in division, I know he's under team control for a little bit, but Gregory Soto on this team, I think could be pretty huge. Almost if you put Gregory Soto on that team and you get Bailey Ober back in that rotation, I could almost say, you know, maybe Soto over the starting pitcher and just hope you get to the postseason and shorten those games.
Oof, I feel like it puts strain on the bullpen every night, because as good as Gray and Ryan can be, I don't think they have that elite level. I think they're just good starters. They're good two, mm-hmm. they're like number two, number yeah. three starters. They're not guys that,
but
in
like
October,
getting a number one on the on the trade deadline.
Right. Maybe adding multiple relievers is easier yeah. because you can't get that impact starter that you want. I'm worried that the Twins problem will be the same problem they run into every time they reach the postseason, where they hit the Yankees or the Astros, and it's just there's a gap.
Who do they run out there? If it's like a one game situation or a three game situation, they're gonna go Gray Ryan Bundy or Gray Ryan Archer, and you're like, oh, okay, good luck. I mean, it's been working for them, and they're good pitchers, and it's more about the offense. But yeah, man, I know it's maybe it's not Berrios, but I wish they had spent the money to get in that ace race that we had this last offseason.
It almost seems like as soon as they got Correa, people were like, well, they can't be done yet, right? They're going to add a starter. And then
they just didn't,
you know? For me, Pagan and Duffy are the two guys who are the most like underperforming. Like if either of them were pitching better, I think we'd maybe look at this bullpen a little bit more favorably. But they're really not. They do need bullpen help. I don't know. Do we think the Marlins are going to sell off their pitching though? Because the Marlins are in that weird in-between where I think they're still trying to build.
See, I don't think it would be a sell for a minor league piece. I think they would want a major league hitter. Like, maybe Austin Martin is high enough upside. They've done this before where they traded Zach yeah. Gallen for Jazz Chisholm, right? They're yeah. always hunting for offense. So if you give them a nice enough bat, but even like somebody like Trevor Larnach, maybe somebody is like, you know, spitting their coffee at their computer saying they would never trade Trevor, whatever it is. If it is Trevor Larnach, then it's going to be a starter with multiple years of control. That's a pretty good starter. So, you know, that's the kind of math you have to do. Not just like, you know, trade Trevor Larnach for a rental. That's not what I'm suggesting. So
yeah.
It's like Larnach for Trevor Rogers or something along those lines. Yeah. Where you're like, okay, both yeah. teams got a very good young player back. Both teams are a lot better. And part of it for the Marlins is just, I think Yuri Perez is going to be a special pitcher. He's going to be up soon. Max Meyer is going to be an impact
guy.
They've
got more pitching coming. Yeah.
Yeah, and they do. That's true.
And they're hitting prospects. They do. JJ Blade is playing better, but otherwise I don't see a ton of hitting prospects in Florida that are going to move the needle. So I think it's still a smart move for them to consider it at least. So I think Pablo Lopez will be in a lot of talks. Rogers is just, his play is problematic right now. So you're buying low. Maybe the Twins see an opportunity there to buy low on Rogers and think they have a fix. They are a smart team, you know, that way. So I think that they value fastball shape and fastball deception a lot, as you can see by their Joe Ryan acquisition. And I think that Trevor Rogers doesn't have that.
Yeah, maybe he's not the exact target, but someone right. that they could have for a while is probably the type of player they're going to get back as opposed to going the rental route. And they're in a position where they can actually get players like that. They do have Simeon Woods Richardson, who they acquired at the trade deadline last year, pitching well at AA. So maybe he gets some innings in the second half of the season. But I think it's putting a lot on a rookie to expect him to come up and be one of your three best starters right away and possibly help you in the postseason.
Unless he's Shane Boz, which
sure.
I don't think
he's that kind of guy.
I don't think he's that yeah. kind of guy.
I think yeah. he's another pitcher similar to what they already have, which is good. It's great to have a bunch of those guys, but you just need right. you need one great starter to do.
Where's your fire breathing monster? You know, like where's your Garrett Cole? Like where's your, you know, like your ace's ace? You know, like
you can't get those guys in mid July though. Very rarely is like a Max Scherzer type available, right? Like he was last July. It just you need a guy on an expiring deal. You need a guy who oftentimes is on a team that like is giving up, right? Like it's just it's really tough, and there's just not that many of those guys. Like you guys mentioned, is Noah Syndergaard? Even if they got him hypothetically,
I just don't think he.
He's not the guy you toe to toe with Garrett Cole.
No, he's more like a two or three at this point because he has five pitches and he's good command. And so he can mix it up, but it, like if he's got to blow the fastball by you, it's not there anymore.
So if I'm the Twins, I'm almost thinking like let's turbocharge our bullpen because in the playoffs you can win that way.
Oh, a follower has just tweeted an interesting spot here. Corey J. Rowe says starters with the biggest increases in Stuff Plus over the last month: Luis Castillo, possibly available.
That's a good name to think about.
Taiwan Walker, Dylan Cease, Aaron Ashby, Corbin Burns, and Trevor Rogers.
Weird.
So maybe there is something changing under the hood there. And that is absolutely what, and I say this lovingly, the nerds are doing right now when you're going up on a trade deadline is because there are certain statistics, certain ways to look at players and say, you know, this person has really changed something and they are a different player now and we can therefore get them and, you know, and at a lower price because Trevor Rogers' overall numbers are bad, but he has changed something in the last 3 weeks and we think this is worth going after.
Yeah, really interesting to see that he's on that list, though. Good sign for him and possibly for the Marlins or any team that's going to be trading for Rogers at this deadline.
Luis Castillo, is he an ace?
He's more of an ace than most of the pitchers you're going to get out there. He can at least pretend that he's one on Halloween.
He'd be the number one on the Twins, right?
Yeah. He'd be the guy that if your season was on the line in an elimination game, you'd want him to have the ball of their current group of starters.
A lot of experience pitching in tough parks, that home park of his. So, Luis Castillo, Gregory Soto. Those are two names that I would love for the Twins. Sorry, just had to interject. I hadn't thought of Luis Castillo, and I was like, oh, duh. Like that might be a name that could move.
I think he's very much in consideration. I think Tyler Mahle's in the mix as well. Mahle to me is more like Gray and Joe Ryan than he is one notch above that. But if you can't get one notch above that, at least get a third one. That could that could be a difference maker as well. Let's talk about the Mets, though. Never discussed on this podcast, never by the three of us either. 110 WRC plus, sixth in Major League Baseball, but 70 home runs as a team. And yes, I know the park works against them. Tim Britton wrote about this, I think, last week now for The Athletic. Same question to you, Britt. Are you concerned about the Mets' lack of pop, even though they put plenty of runs on the board and seem to have a competent, above-average offense?
No, I'm more concerned with the Mets have a bunch of concerns in my mind. I think they need to get bullpen help. Maybe look for some outfield stuff. But is it a concern? Sure, if we're being nitpicky. But they lowered their strikeout rate as a ton, lineup-wise. They put the ball in play a lot. And as you mentioned, Citi Field, not a hitter friendly park. So I'm not super concerned with that. I'm more concerned with games like Tuesdays where Max Scherzer pitches fantastic and they lose that game. Like they're getting back to Grom. Scherzer is back now. I'm more concerned if I'm the Mets about how I'm going to close off those games because the Braves are coming. The Braves are here and you can't lose games started by Scherzer and DeGrom anymore. You just can't the way this is all shaping up to be a crazy NL East race. So no, I'm not concerned. It's only going to get hotter. It's only going to get more humid. The ball's going to fly a little bit more. Again, I think it's a little getting nitpicky. If I'm going to go through the list of my Mets concerns, the power is maybe on the podium, but it's a bronze medal for me.
No, I missed it. I was combing through the different teams looking for weaknesses. And I did miss that. The Mets bullpen is 16th. In Fangraphs WAR, so there is that. I mean, that's pretty low for how good the team they are, right? That's pretty low for a contender. So, I think there is something there. And the nice thing is that they don't need a closer with a capital C right? So they can pull maybe like kind of Clay Holmesian game where they're like, we just want this good reliever of yours, we like him because of our numbers or whatever. He's not your closer. Just give us that third best reliever that you guys seem to think is just okay. We'll give him a nice home, you know, and turn him into Clay Holmes, as you see now. Although, to be honest, Clay Holmes had the best stuff plus number when he was available as a reliever. They did change some things about him, but, you know, he was already kind of diamond in the rough-esque. So I don't know what that name is off the top of my head in terms of, like, who they can go get.
How about Joe Jimenez? No one's going to get excited about him. He's pitching really well for the Tigers right now. Kind of second or third best reliever, not Gregory Soto. So it's a little easier.
Yeah.
Or the Orioles bullpen has actually, well, they've kind of come back down to earth a little bit, but they had a bunch of guys that were overperforming. Maybe you steal somebody out of there.
I think Jorge Lopez, I think he's pitching to what he can do as a reliever. You know, this is, I always thought he had this in him as a reliever. Jorge Lopez, you know, there's two more years of control. He's a lot better as a reliever. I think I could see going after Jorge Lopez.
You know, the Nationals really have nobody. Tanner Rainey, I thought, could be a trade chip, but like he just can't consistently get it done. Unless, like
he's
you said,
under,
you know,
team control for a while. Like I think he might cost a little more.
Unless you look at him and you say, "Hey, we can fix him," because the Nationals don't really have the best analytics development track record, right? If you see something that you're confident you could fix, maybe you take that gamble.
Chris Stratton has a really nice curveball. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Diaz has been good, but the bridge to Diaz is shaky at best. And again, you can't be losing these. They're not going to let DeGrom go 7-8 innings when he comes back, right? But you still can't lose those starts. Bassett is now on the IL. It seems like all year the Mets have kind of tried to hold things afloat pitching-wise. I just think they need another arm.
They've been a top 10 rotation without DeGrom all season without Scherzer for a significant portion of the first half. Like it's surprising that they've been this productive so far.
The weird thing is when you're getting healthy, a lot of times you say, okay, well, what happens when we just push this young guy into the pen? I don't really see that for them, right? Like, I don't think David Peterson is a real great asset in the pen. I think he's a starter, unless he spends a whole offseason training to be in the pen. Tyler Megill, maybe, like, I think in the playoffs, Megill is like a good long reliever, is going to help their pen. So that is a little something that could help them, is him getting healthy and adding another arm that's sort of in between the pen and the rotation. But I also found one other small weakness for them is that they are 16th in WRC plus against lefties. So I was looking through their roster, and it's JD Davis. And Davis has been underperforming. So if you believe the projections and you believe in JD Davis, then you can probably just say, hey, we're going to get JD Davis back at the deadline. You know what I mean? Like he's a right-handed batter that can hit and can slug, and that's what we want. But if you want to be better than JD Davis going forward, the names that I have circled here are Patrick Wisdom, Trey Mancini, and then Brandon Drury.
Yeah, I like the latter two. I think Wisdom still strikes out too much for me, but Drury started to turn things around as a member of the Mets last season. Very small role for them. I think he only had 88 plate appearances, but he started hitting the ball a lot harder last season, carried that over to this season, barreling more than ever, brings defensive versatility, even if he's not necessarily a good defender at all the places he can play. And when you look at where he plays, he does fit their needs, right? Second, third, DH, like that's kind of a good fit. So I don't think they would struggle in the playoffs because they don't hit enough home runs, but I do think they need one more bat just to bring up the consistency of this offense a bit more. Yeah, get the floor even a little higher. If you're not going to hit a lot more home runs, bump it up another level, be a top three offense.
And for what it's worth, Drury's projected to be a better bat than Eduardo Escobar. So you could make Drury more of a starter there, and then Eduardo Escobar frees you up and plays, brings up the floor elsewhere. So, you know, just more versatility. I that one seems like a big one. The other place, and I don't know, who's next on the rundown?
Dodgers, right? You going alphabetical or is it the Brewers?
Where do you want to go next?
Well, I got a segue here because Milwaukee, yeah, let's get on the segue. Zoom, zoom. Milwaukee is 24th against left-handers in WRC+. So they have been a better offense recently, and this is maybe a better offense than they've had in the last few runs at it. And if they can be over like a league average offense, then they do have a chance. There's almost been no teams with a below league average offense that have done anything in the postseason. And we've seen that hurt the Brewers in the past. They're close to league average. If they can do something better against lefties, then I think they could be better. So Brandon Drury does fit a little bit there. It's more maybe in the outfield, do they rather? And right now they're running out two righties in center, Tyrone Taylor and Jonathan Davis. And I think that's partially because they're trying to find somebody who can hit lefties. I have written down for them Michael Taylor as the cheap option, but I really think they should consider the expensive option, Ramon Laureano. There's a right-handed hitter with some power and some speed that can play center field. He would be much better than the guys that they're playing in center field right now. It would be a little bit expensive. There is the question of if the A's will trade somebody that they could use next year, if they're going to try and be better in the next couple of years or not. But Ramon Laureano, I think, deserves a mention there for the Brewers.
Yeah, I think Laureano's a guy that definitely can get traded somewhere at the deadline that people don't talk a lot about, so he's a good name to add to the conversation. Britt, I think my familiarity with the flaws of this team, like that's where I'm a little skeptical of the current build, even if their floor is a little higher than it has been in recent years. I think their struggles against lefties are actually going to dissipate a little bit. They lost Luis Urias at the beginning of the season to an IL stint. He's healthy now. They missed Willy Adames for a little while. He's healthy now.
That's true.
They've lost Hunter Renfro for a little while.
They have some righties, you know.
Their three best righties have all been on the IL at some point. So I think they could go either way. It could be a righty or a lefty that makes this lineup better because they got Yelich from the left side. They got Rowdy from the left side. Yelich in the leadoff role seems to be working better. So I think if they're going to go big, I think they're also players for Cedric Mullins and Brian Reynolds. I think if you look at that team.
I got the position right, but the handedness doesn't matter as much to you. Especially since they do have two, like Tyrone Taylor might be a league average-ish guy and he's right-handed.
I really like Taylor as a fourth.
Yeah, and also like I feel Michael Taylor is not a guy who's going to impact your offense. He's a defensive first guy. I mean, he always has been. He's terrific. He every time I watch him, I think I watched 2 days ago, maybe it's 4th of July. Made another gold glove type of catch. He's always been that guy. His bat's going to come and go.
He could be interesting as like a Yankees acquisition, right? Shore up outfield defense because you don't care as much.
A team that doesn't need the offense, but like for the Brewers, for them, I'm going more a Mullins or a Brian Reynolds, guys who have a little bit more offensive upside than a Michael Taylor. Also, what's nice, of course, is you're getting a lot of team control with both of those guys too, which just fits the Brewers model of, the Brewers aren't a team who are going to go all in on a short-term rental. It's just not traditionally them. I think they would like the team control, like the fact that this is a move for beyond just this season. So I think those are two really good names to throw out there as well.
Some question of if they have the pieces to get anybody with long-term control.
It's a fair question. They don't have the major league ready position players, even that Minnesota does, for example, right? That's where I think the Twins are at such a relative advantage getting some of the better pitching that doesn't seem as available. But for the Brewers, another thing that's weird, they've had their starting pitching depth really tested in the first half. Freddy Peralta's still on the IL. Woodruff is back now. Adrian Hauser's down with a flexor strain right now. They may need to go out and find one extra arm just to help them get through the second half and get all the way into the postseason before they can shorten things up to the big three up top, and then whichever one of Ashby or Lauer is performing better at that time is probably the clear-cut fourth where the other guy moves into the bullpen. I also wonder if they could use one more reliever. If you could find another filthy lefty to throw in there as part of the bridge to Josh Hader, that wouldn't hurt since their three best relievers outside of Hader are all righties. I think that's the other little thing that you could maybe tweak about this roster. But center field seems like the easiest place to upgrade because they have so much versatility at those other spots where that Brandon Drury type player would make their offense better, but he wouldn't necessarily fit very well with the other pieces that they've already got playing on a really like everyday or near everyday sort of basis.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think we should talk about the Dodgers, though, too, since we're talking about all the division leaders. And they kind of fit into this perfect problem of, with injuries piling up, how much can you really rely on the players that are supposed to come back, right? Because it's Walker Buehler could be back in September. Blake Treinen is supposed to return in August. And if you see both of those guys coming back, those are massive lifts, and it solves a lot of their questions at the present time. But it's not just those guys. It's not just those guys who are missing right now.
Chris Taylor, I think, puts them in the outfield market potentially, doesn't it?
Yeah, because he can play all over.
In the last couple of weeks.
And then there's Max Muncy, who's like playing through injury. He has been playing a little bit better recently. There's a little bit more power in his bat recently, but if that's, you know, what is the true level you're going to get from Max Muncy, I think is another question you have that's related to this. So
yeah, I think the Taylor injury on top of Muncy seemingly playing hurt all season, and then some doubts about Justin Turner, even though he has also started to turn things around more recently. I think Keith and I woke him up last Friday. We were really digging into Turner specifically, and comes out and has a two-homer game, I think, the same night that we recorded, which is exactly what you want when you're trying to predict what a team is going to do and telling people how much someone's struggling. The playoffs, if they started today, Buehler wouldn't be ready. So you'd have Kershaw, Urias, Gonsolin, and Anderson probably as your four, with Mitch White, Ryan Pepiot kind of as their support bridge guys.
You'd be in the mix with anybody else.
Right? Yeah, you'd still be as good as the other teams across the NL as they're currently built. Yeah. I think you'd be a slight underdog to the Mets if Jacob DeGrom were healthy.
Don't forget May.
Dustin May is working his way back. That's a huge potential lift for them. Plus, they still have Bobby Miller and Gavin Stone in the upper levels of the minor leagues.
Bobby Miller throws 100.
Bobby Miller would be a great
as a starter.
Here's an electric guy out of the pen for now that you're going to use as a starter later. So you've got.
I don't think they're going to buy a reliever.
You don't think
because
so?
They have relievers falling out their pockets. Yency Almonte.
Yeah, they're pitching factory.
Yeah, they're really good at making relievers. So I don't think they'll buy a reliever. I don't even think they'll buy a starter because I believe in those names, and I think they're just going to wait for health. I am interested in this idea about an outfielder.
I think they're in the market. I think that's a hot market, right? Like, look how many teams need these outfielders.
That's
and Ben
true.
Tendi's the clear number one guy, I would guess. Free agent to be, that could be a Dodger fit because what do they care? They're all in. They could get a rental.
Yeah, you're right.
That some of the medicals on Taylor's problem may determine, because if Taylor's problem is short term and the recovery is, it looks good, then you do have a backup center fielder.
Yeah.
I don't think Mookie Betts. Is he a backup center fielder?
No, but like, do you feel that he's okay now because you just got him back also? So you're juggling a lot if you're the Dodgers, but they did just take 3 out of 4, could have probably taken 4 out of 4 from the Padres. They look like a much better team than San Diego right now, even with these injuries.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought they played all right. They played tight. You know, it wasn't, there weren't blowouts. And then, you know, the Padres still have number one, Luke Voit is number one in barrels over the last month. So that's like a sort of third or fourth bat that looks like it might actually be legit. It looked really bad for a while. Yeah. So you've got Cronenworth as a table setter. Manny has to get back off that ankle, and Tatis comes back, and then you have a legit 4 or 5 batters at the top of the order, and they don't seem to have starting pitching problems, and their bench is pretty good. So, like, I could see the Dodgers making one last push when everyone's healthy offensively against this Dodgers team, and I think that the Padres are a legitimate postseason team. And like the Dodgers, I don't see a really obvious place to upgrade, especially if Tatis is playing in the outfield, then I don't know that the Padres are in the market for an outfielder.
I think you got to get a bat if you're the Padres, because you can't rely on Tatis coming back. They're now saying late July. They keep pushing his timeline back, right? And
they're also relying on Nomar Mazara. And
you're not sure if Manny's ankle's going to be a whole year thing, right? Like, we don't really know. Is he going to be...
It hasn't been that good since he came back off it. No.
Yeah, so I think you get offense.
If the Tatis timetable keeps getting pushed back, that's a tough blow for them, because they really need him back. They've been great without him so far, exceeding expectations, I think, kind of for everyone at this point. But I also don't think AJ Preller is going to sit back and say, yep, we're okay, even with Tatis coming back. I think you look at this core and say, we are built to win right now. We are going to push more chips in. As far as the Dodgers go, I think they may have to give Miguel Vargas a look too. You know, their third base prospect.
I'm really surprised they haven't. They are playing him in the outfield some, I think. And so they're trying that out. I like Benintendi to the Dodgers a little bit too, because Benintendi has been pulling the fewest fly balls of his career. And I think that he has above average, if not plus, raw power. And I think that, you know, Robert Vanskoyak, the hitting instructor there, the hitting coach in L.A., I think that's something he would identify pretty quickly. And I think that there's a potential that they could say, hey, Benintendi as is pretty good and helps us out a lot, but maybe Vanskoyak can unlock those pull fly balls and get some more power out of him. It's certainly a better place to try and do that than Kansas City in terms of the park. So I'm talking myself into Benintendi. I think the Padres would also like Benintendi though.
There's 6 or 7 different teams that make a lot of sense for him. I mean, I think the Royals might end up getting a surprisingly good return for a guy that becomes a free agent this offseason. I think the other Dodgers question is Cody Bellinger. If you do the past calendar year leaderboard, who has Cody Bellinger been since last July? He is a below replacement level player. He's hitting 183 with a 239 OBP and a 349 slugging percentage. He's striking out 28.2% of the time. Yeah, he hits some home runs. Yeah, he steals some bases. And he's a good defender in center field. But he has a 62 WRC plus.
I was just talking to a pitcher about who we'd like to see in the home run derby. And they said they still thought Cody Bellinger's swing was amazing and beautiful.
Well, beautiful. It might be a beautiful swing, but it's not working.
Yeah, it might be pretty, but yeah, it's not getting it done.
I guess the other question is, if the Dodgers have a bigger move up their sleeve, if they're among the teams that are in on the possible center fielders available, do they move away from Bellinger? They deal him as part of the return with some other young players? And if you were a team like the Pirates or the Orioles or one of the teams that had a center fielder to give, would you want Cody Bellinger back? If the Dodgers can't fix him, do you think you can fix him? You'd have him for next season as well.
Year.
So you'd have, the rest of this season and next season to possibly, you know, figure it out with him. Is he even a useful trade piece right now?
I think they swallow him. I think that he becomes more of a defensive guy for them, that, you know, defensive center fielder that can run into some, that can help you on the base pass and run into some. I'm surprised that he's below replacement, but a lot of that is 2021 lifting there. He was a whole full win below replacement. This year, the defense is there. The base running is there. You know, he does, you know, take some walks. He does have a bound of league average isolated power. So, like, a lot of the pieces are at least league average, and he, you know, they need a center fielder. So I think you would just be like, hey, you may, maybe he'll unlock. We would rather just keep the defensive center fielder that fits our team and hope that he unlocks it here, I think.
Yeah, he has no value. If you're the Orioles, you're like, yeah, let's get rid of Cedric Mullins and bring in Cody Bellinger. It just doesn't make any sense with where a lot of these teams are. Same thing in Pittsburgh at all. I think I agree. You
maybe Florida, you know, maybe Florida is like, you know, we think that we're competitive, maybe competitive next year. And but I like, you're not, are you taking Cody Bellinger and Mitch White for Pablo Lopez?
I don't think that's making you a lot better. I think he's just a weird player because he's one of the worst regulars on a really good team. And he was great just a couple of years ago. And he does still have some real life value. So probably not going anywhere, but also not impossible. And it would be kind of fun to see if a team did want to take that chance on Cody Bellinger. So here it is. It's the 3-0 World Series Challenge. It's a game that I have made up. I think this concept first came from my old SiriusXM co-host at RotoWire, Chris Liss. He did it for football. It'd be like week four of the football season, and he'd say, okay, you get your choice. You can have four teams, any four teams you want to win the Super Bowl, and I get the rest, or you can have the rest of the teams, and I get to choose four, and then you just kind of have like a 50-50 sort of bet on it for the rest of the season. For our rules, since we're recording this on July 6th, and we're at halfway point through the season, I want to do this with three teams. So you have your choice. You can each have your choice.
Makes it a little bit harder.
Makes it a little harder. You can choose any three teams you want, and if you win the World Series with one of those three teams, you're right, and you win. The other person gets the remaining 27 teams that you didn't choose. So if one of those teams wins the World Series, they win the bet. So it's two problems folded into one. Which side do you prefer? Do you want your choice of any three teams today? Do you think you could confidently, with three shots at it, end up with the correct World Series winner? I mean, what do you think? You know, which side, A or B, do you prefer?
I'm going to take the three.
You want the three. Okay, Britt, you want the three or do you want 27?
I want the three.
You want your choice of the three. I'll play against both of you. You can each choose your own three teams. I'll take the B side against both of you.
Wow.
And so you can each choose your own three teams completely separate. Who wants to go first?
I'm going to be mad about this.
Yeah, that's fine.
We're going one by one or three? I just give you my three.
If you want to take all three at once, Britt, you can have all three and then...
Yeah, give your three. I'm pretty sure my three, I'm going chalk, so I got
That's
my three.
That's fine. No, you can take as much chalk as you want.
There's one little asterisk.
Okay, so you're both on the choose three side. Britt, which three teams do you want?
Give me the Mets.
Okay.
The Yankees.
Yep.
I can't pick all division winners because that's just like... I feel like there's like a second place team lurking that is just, you know, I covered the 2019 Nationals. I mean, who saw that one coming, right?
That's right.
It's so tough. You have to look at it and say, who could actually, let's go Padres. Who could do some All crazy right. stuff?
Britt's going one a little bit different, going with the Padres as her third with the Mets and the
Dude,
Yankees.
I'm just going chalk, man. I think it just speaks to me. Yankees, Astros, and the only asterisk is Mets over Dodgers. I think that discussion about their age scared me off a little bit. So Yankees, Astros, Mets.
Yankees, exactly. Astros,
boring,
Mets.
But like
it is.
Three of the top four teams in the big leagues, you know?
I know. I almost went Astros. They're such a good team.
I can't decide now what will make me more angry. The most angry will be if the Padres win. Not because, they're a great team. I'm not, like, rooting against them. It's just because you went off script and took the Padres.
Well, because teams don't win the World Series. Like, if someone had picked the Braves last year, we would have kind of...
Oh, I know.
Really. So who could do it? And if Tatis comes back and he's Tatis, they could do it.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the Braves doing again, you know.
The Dodgers, I get the Dodgers against both of you. Like, that's pretty good for me.
If Christian Yelich, like, somehow found his MVP form, Like, yeah. It's not crazy, but if he just, like, oh. just started hitting, like, an MVP again, I think the Brewers could do it. I mean, they Nobody obviously feels... have the arms.
Yeah, you get the Twins, too, Derek, and the White Sox. If they make The White Sox are dangerous. They could be really dangerous.
I get the official cockroach of the National League, the Cardinals. Like, they're never dead, so...
never dead.
It's great. I mean, so I've got, in this scenario, and I could lose big if it's any... If it's the Mets or the Yankees, I lose to both of you, which is real bad. If it's the Padres... or the Astros, I only lose to one of you. What are we going to put up on this? One six-pack? One case of beer? Like per bet? How do you want to do this?
Just a six-pack.
A six-pack. All right, a six-pack each. So the worst I could do is lose two six-packs. Best I can do is win two. I feel good about this. I'm amazed that I ended up with the Dodgers. I figured there'd be at least one scenario against you where I would be buying someone a beer or a six-pack if the Dodgers won.
I already owe Britt a box for the baby.
No,
I'm gonna send her some beer that she can have after she has the baby.
Yes.
In related matter, for my birthday, my mom said she bought me some beer and she was gonna send it to me. And then she called me on my birthday and she said, "Oh, by the way, I bought you a box of beer and then I drank it all. So I will have to send it to you next week."
Amazing.
Very well done.
Thank you. Thank you, Mom. So, pest control. Here we go.
We got one more. We got one more segment before we go.
What's the sound drop on pest control?
Bug zapper?
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that's a little less aggressive than a mouse trap or something. We don't want that. That's an unpleasant sound.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we'll go with the bug zapper. So, pest control, which current last place team do you expect to be the biggest thorn in the side of contenders during the second half? Britt, you inspired this question, so I think you've got an answer ready to go here. So I'm curious who you think the biggest pest is going to be of the current last place teams.
I think it's got to be the Orioles for a couple of reasons. One, they're in a division where we've talked about this before. Like, could three teams go out of the East, right? Like, what are we doing here? Could, especially... when you look at the Yankees, Toronto, the Rays, the Red Sox, they're all still in it. What do we know about the way the schedule is set up right now? They're going to play a lot of divisional games. The Orioles are also guys coming off of a winning month, like their first winning month in several years. Not to say enthusiasm is high.
So 5 years. I know. Their first winning month in 5 years.
You guys, not to say that like it's super like, you know, they're not having to have parades in downtown Baltimore over this, but people do feel better about where the team is at, right? And you've seen it, or I don't know, you guys probably don't watch them. I watch them probably more than I should. The last couple nights against Texas, they were able to get extra inning wins. They're feeling better about themselves. They're playing better. Adley Rutschman has been, after kind of a really big struggle after that first week, he's come up with some big hits. Some of their young guys are coming up. They're feeling better about themselves. And when I look at some of these other last place teams, I don't have as much optimism about them. This is a team that like is now full of youth. And what do young guys do? They're playing to show the organization, right? It's not these big leaguers who are like, oh, how many more days do I have to go until I can go home and just get this season over with? The Orioles are full of guys who are like trying to prove themselves, not just this year, but beyond. And I think you've seen it before with certain teams. I think they're a team that is set up to kind of be pesky down the stretch.
Yeah, the other thing that's really interesting about the Orioles, too, is that coming into the season, I had some questions about kind of their second wave of prospects. You know, obviously, I think we all loved Adley Rutschman, and he's going to be a star. And Grayson Rodriguez, I thought, was going to be one of the most impactful rookie pitchers to come up. Unfortunately, he had an injury, so he's probably not going to debut. Maybe late in the year he will, but probably not in 2022. Maybe we see him in the fall league. Yeah. But it's guys like Gunnar Henderson having huge seasons in the minors. Henderson looks like an impact player who's going to be on the left side of the infield for the next half decade, starting in 2023. But then it's Colton Cowser and Jordan Westberg and Kobe Mayo and Connor Norby, all those guys moving up. On the pitching side, after Rodriguez, DL Hall still missing a lot of bats, having some issues with control. But just to see that group of players moving up to the upper levels and performing generally like well or very well across the board, that's the other really encouraging thing that's happened for the Orioles that I wasn't sure that was going to happen, because I think that was a little more of an open question to me at the beginning of the season, that they would have those next pieces they need for this rebuild actually come through. And it looks like they're coming through.
Yeah, and I'm about to say similar things about a team that you will not anticipate. Cincinnati Reds, baby.
I was going to do the drum roll. Cincinnati
Reds, they're coming on. No, listen, I wouldn't say for the whole team. I wouldn't say that this franchise is in a great spot. I would take the Orioles, actually, I think, long-term over the Reds. But I do want to point out that Hunter Green has, I think, the number two stuff plus in the big league. So he's a really high stuff starter they've got there. Graham Ashcraft is a really unique starter that throws two fastballs at 97 miles an hour. Nick Lodolo, the stuff plus model, loves him too. So those are three young pitchers that you could come into town at the wrong time when they're clicking and they just shut you down. The asterisk for me on the Reds is, what kind of a teardown are they going to do? Are they going to sell Tommy Pham? Are they going to sell Brandon Drury? Are they going to sell anybody that we maybe haven't been discussing, like even a Nick Senzel or somebody that have team control? Are they going to do are they going to make big moves at this deadline? If they do sell off that offense, then it might be kind of tough even for a Hunter Green. He might have to throw a no-hitter to make it work. But I do see teams coming to town thinking the Reds are easy and then getting three-state pitchers throwing 97s with really interesting stuff. So I think they could really spoil some dreams down the stretch.
I think they'll still have a handful of players, even if they do a pretty big teardown. Jonathan India, Nick Senzel, Tyler Stevens, they're going to probably keep the guys up the middle. I think it's a question about Votto. You know, he didn't come up in our conversation looking at how we could upgrade contenders around the league, but what if the Reds trade Joey Votto and give him a chance to go try and win a World Series?
Would be weird. I mean, it's, you know, you're talking about a guy who's, I would say, probably going to the Hall of Fame and probably going with your hat on. You know, you may just opt for the, hey, let's do, you know, the dog and pony show on the way out, you know, where we do the nice farewell tours and you were a Red your entire career, you know?
Yeah, I want some random team to give Joey Votto a surfboard as a gift.
But at the same time, I think if you ask Joey, I think he would do it. I think he would leave because he hasn't done a lot of postseason winning, and he still cares about that sort of thing. So I think he would do it. The Reds would have to throw some money down. So it'd be a question of how much money they throw down. And if it's more of a money dump where they just don't get much back and they, you know, get half of the salary back or something, or if they pay more and try to get an actual prospect. Plus, we need a little bit of time because Votto has had two seasons so far, where the first season was pre-COVID with the knob on his bat, not very exciting. And then since, he's been playing better, but the overall results don't look great yet. So, you know, if he has another month where he's hitting well, then I think that might move the needle into making him be something that a contender would want to pick up. There's not also, how many contenders? Do we talk about a first base hole on any of these contenders
Houston.
That we were talking about?
Houston.
And Houston did it. I mean, they traded for late career Justin Verlander, and I think the circumstances were slightly different, but I think they actually, they could actually do it.
Yeah.
That'd be funny. Joe
and they're really, I mean, they've got Yordan as their best all-around hitter, but they're pretty right-handed otherwise. It's Yordan and Brantley. Tucker's a lefty too. So they're pretty well balanced actually, but Votto would fit.
It makes it a little bit iffy defensively because Yordan is a future DH at least. Michael Brantley is a present DH.
Yeah, but it makes the Astros a lot more fun.
It does.
Yeah.
I like this. I like this galaxy braining we've done.
I do.
Best galaxy braining that you can find anywhere, really. If you are enjoying the galaxy braining or just the contents of the show as a whole, you can leave us a nice rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We'd really appreciate it if you did that. Be sure to barrel up on the like button. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can find Eno on Twitter at EnoSaris. Find Britt at Britt_Giroli. I am at Derek Van Riper. If you'd like to support The Athletic with a subscription, you can get one for $1 a month for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/baseball show. The Athletic Baseball Show returns on Friday.
At the 3-0 show, you've always got the green light.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.